This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Jim Ehler is the dean of the engineering school at the University of Virginia, and he joins us in studio. Welcome.
Thank you, Corey.
How
are you
doing?
Appreciate you allowing me time to talk to you a little bit today.
Absolutely. I've been really looking forward to this. The place that I always like to start with interviews is always a little 101, who are you? So the listener driving down the road knows who this person is. Give us a little background on Jim Ehler.
Absolutely. Maybe to start off, the best way to say it is that a lot of people around the university feel like that my blood is not really red. It has a little orange in it since I've been here so long. I actually started here in 1964 as an undergraduate. Actually pretty much went straight through from my undergraduate degree in electrical engineering. Got into the computer engineering area and looked at sort of the first microprocessors that came out in the 70s. Finally finished up my PhD in 1978, after working some time and sort of like the rest of, working some time in the engineering school as a research engineer, but, sort of like a lot of our other students here, where people started had to, try to run me out of the engineering school or run me out of Charlottesville because we have a hard time getting rid of our students because they like the area so much and so forth.
Yeah. So you were an undergraduate then back when you had to sign up for computer time when the computers filled the room and you got all your cards and
I had to do that. I had magnetic tape drives that we stored information on. I had cards that we put the programs on. You had to submit your programs to be run by the staff and then come back later for the printout and so forth.
Jim, what was it about engineering that attracted? Did you come in as an undergraduate at UVA as a first year saying, I'm definitely going to get into engineering? Or what happened that brought that about in your life?
That's an interesting question and one that I think a lot of us in engineering school talk about a lot now, because I think when I was became interested in engineering, it was because a lot of the technology was such that you could tinker at that time. For some of you out there might remember things like the Heathkit in the electronics area, where you could put together your own amplifiers and televisions and test equipment. I guess the same thing is true for the mechanical engineers, where you could really at that time work on your own car. This day and time, it's so much embedded electronics, so much sophistication relative to the technology, it's really hard to do that anymore. And so I think this day and time, students are not really aware of what engineering is all about. And my view is that probably not as many coming into engineering that really know what they want to do as some of us did. But I always knew that I wanted to do electronics.
So you were one of those kids that would take something apart and then try to put it back together.
I was one of those kids that would do that was responsible for the public address system in the high schools and did a lot of physics experiments out of class and that sort of thing.
That's so great. What's the particular field that you specialized in engineering?
Started out in more of the image processing area, but then in the early 70s, when the first microcomputers came out, got really interested in basically the miniaturization of computing technology and the ability to put computers in lots of different areas, devices, things like that. And so computers came to be sort of an integral part of a lot of the new technology was coming out. So I got fascinated with, I was always really an electrical engineer by background, so I really wasn't a software type. I could write programs, but it was really a means to an end, but I was more really interested in what types of electronic devices that would have integrated computers built into them.
We're talking with Jim Ehler. He's the Dean of the School of Engineering and Applied Science at the University of Virginia. Phone lines are open, by the way, at 977-1070 if you've got a comment or a question for Jim. You must be very proud to be leading this school. Recently, a study by Princeton University ranked the University of Virginia School of Engineering as the third best in the entire nation, only behind UC Santa Barbara and Duke That really says a lot about the folks you have there, the students, and a lot about your leadership as well.
Well, I appreciate the credit there, but there's a lot of exciting activity going on at the engineering school. I am extremely excited about being able to really work with the engineering school to take it to another level. I guess I should say that the engineering school at the University of Virginia is sort of in a situation of sort of having good news and bad news. It's a relative small engineering school as engineering schools go, especially to be ranked in, say, the top 50 schools or really trying to go into the top 25 schools. But the good news is that the comprehensive university that it's embedded in is really an asset to the engineering school. We draw really excellent students from around the world. Essentially, there are some 75 countries represented in our graduate and undergraduate population. We have probably all 50 states represented in the engineering school, mainly because of the fact that we have about a third of our undergraduate population that are out-of-staters, which is consistent with the rest of the university. But what we end up doing is bringing in students that not only are very strong in science and engineering, science and mathematics, and really want to play a part somehow in the technology field, but also are very interested in other aspects of life. My view is that what we end up trying to do is to not just basically educate a student in the area of technology, but also try to create a complete person, worrying about things like economics. Most of our students will either, well, I should say about 40% of our students will either double major or minor in some other area than the specific area that they're going to get their degree in. And a lot of those areas might be economics, religious studies. And they've really come to the University of Virginia, I think, because of the opportunity of taking advantage of a major comprehensive university and one with an excellent liberal arts program.
Our guest is Jim Ehler. He's the dean of the School of Engineering and Applied Science at the University of Virginia. It seems that, you know, every now and then the media do some big story about how American kids just don't know science anymore. It's not a part of their thinking. And, of course, you get kids consistently, first years, who are well-prepared and eager to explore science and engineering into the graduate level. But that said, it's a fact that the science scores among American kids go down and down and down. Can you talk a little bit about the whole presence of a science education in the American curriculum? Where are we doing things right? Where are we going wrong? And what should we be doing and why? What is it about thinking as a scientist that Americans need now, perhaps more than ever?
Good question, Corey. I think I'm sort of on a bandwagon now to try to convince all high school kids, even elementary school and middle school kids, but high school kids that if they're good in math and science, that a profession of engineering will basically serve them well no matter what they decide to do. And really the reason for that is that I think right this day and time is that we're really in a technology-based economy. And sort of almost no matter what you decide to do, you're going to be involved in technology in some way, shape, or form. My view of the value of an engineering education is that we pretty much educate you in essentially four areas. I should back up and say maybe that our founder of the University, Thomas Jefferson, had this idea that to be an educated population, or I should say to maintain our democracy, we needed to be an educated population. And his idea of an educated population was that you – were educated in the quantitative skills, so that you need to know some forms of mathematics. I'm not sure that he necessarily believed that you needed calculus and differential equations, but he did feel like that you needed to understand statistics and fractions and things that people use every day in terms of making their decisions in their life. They really needed to understand what he called the scientific process, and that's really the process of discovery, understanding how to formulate problems, how to solve those problems, because everybody that's Dan Thomas is involved in problem solving, no matter what discipline you're in. He was also pretty much adamant about the fact that you had to have good communication skills, both written and oral. And so I think that goes without saying that if you're going to have an impact this day and time, you got to be able to communicate whatever idea that you're trying to do. And then really, I guess the other one is just the whole issue of creativity and trying to basically be inquisitive in terms of building up things. But my argument really is those are the skills. First of all, I should say that those are the skills that we really work hard in making sure their engineers are good at. There's really no way that at an undergraduate level we can educate our students to be complete professionals. Really, if you're going to stay in the profession that you choose, you're really going to have probably some advanced degree or at a minimum some continuing education program. But the skills that the fundamental skills that we leave you with engineering are really these skills. And so we're seeing a lot of our students that will take these skills and go into banking. We also have programs now where we take some of our students between the third and fourth year and actually put them in an environment that's involved with technology policy. So we take about 10 or 15 students, place them in the environment in either Washington, D.C. or Richmond, where they actually get to interface with legislators and other people involved with technology policy. And these students do an excellent job just because of the fundamental skills that they've had. So we find a lot of our students will end up in finance, in banking, in marketing, and all of those areas that really are related to the technologies that they're going to be dealing with.
Dean of the School of Engineering and Applied Science at the University of Virginia, Jim Ayler, is our guest today on Charlotte Hill Right Now. Some of the interesting aspects of the engineering school over at UVA is the very high percentage of women that participate in the engineering school, and this is unlike other schools in the nation. Why is that, and what does this add positively, you think, to engineering at UVA that might be missing, say, at a Duke or at a Santa Barbara?
Cora, that's a great asset that we have, I think, with the number of students, a number of women students that do enroll in the engineering school. The largest percentage, I guess, of any engineering school is about 35%. We're averaging about 27% of our total student population to be women. This past year, as a matter of fact, we had the largest percentage of women in our incoming class, which is about 30%. And the other really outstanding issue is that they are really outstanding students. For example, right now the chair of the honor committee is a female engineering school student. We have a lot of our other women in the engineering school are in leadership roles in terms of engineering student council and things like that. I guess my view of the reason that they are attracted, at least some of the best students are attracted to UVA, is because of the fact that we are part of a comprehensive university, that we're part of a major liberal arts university, so that they're able to pursue not only an engineering degree, but also pursue interest in other areas that they might have. The other thing I guess I should say is that the university itself is about 58% women, so they're not really in a situation where, or I should say maybe turn it around, is that independent of the fact that we only have 30% women, there's a huge population in the university that they can relate to and interact with and be involved in activities across the university.
Now, this is very different from when you came as a first year in 1964.
This is quite different than when I came.
But this is a transformation that you've seen in your professional career here in Charlottesville on grounds at the university, the influx. You know, for so long they said, no, we can't let women in here because the grades will plummet and the honor system will be killed, and it just the opposite happened.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think the caliber of the women students we get are excellence. As a matter of fact, I think it's caused quite an excellent competition between the male and female population and within engineering school, because they're some of the best and brightest that we've got. And I think they just add such a dimension to the school and the university that it's amazing to think that we never had that situation. So I think it's an excellent opportunity. One of the things that's extremely important with engineering this day and time is really the idea of collaboration, teamwork. We have to have in all of our disciplines, because of our accreditation process, a capstone project, which have the attributes of teamwork, being able to take what you've learned over the last over the first 3 years of your curriculum and be able to integrate those into some sort of major design experience. And so having women, having students of all cultures in these design teams is absolutely invaluable for what they're going to see once they get out into the real world.
The School of Engineering and Applied Science at the University of Virginia, one of the very best of its kind in the entire world. We're talking with the Dean of the School of Engineering, Jim Ayler, and we'll continue this discussion on the other side of this break. Let's visit the local newsroom for some local news and some weather, and we'll be back. And when we get back, let's talk a little bit about some of the ways in which research at the university is finding its way to the marketplace, and we'll also talk a little bit about nanotechnology right here in Charlottesville. You're listening to Charlottesville Right Now on News Radio 1070 WINA. Jim Ayler is the Dean of the School of Engineering and Applied Science at the University of Virginia, one of the very best schools of its kind in the entire world, right here in our own backyard. And he joins us in studio for a discussion of his work and the work of this amazing school. One of the things we were talking about, Jim, during the break was how there might be a lot of alumni of UVA, alumni of the engineering school, who might remember it as predominantly an undergraduate-focused teaching type of school. But that has changed. That has evolved over the years. And now we're looking at some of the very best research of its kind in the nation.
Absolutely, Corey. And it's interesting that you bring that up, because it's really sometimes a sensitive issue with some of the alumni that remember this as a primarily small undergraduate school, and actually the attention that they got from their faculty and student faculty ratio and stuff like that. But having said that, it's really important, and I guess I should say too that the addition of a major research component really has, I think, enhanced the undergraduate experience that they get. You really need to have the best and brightest teachers, you know, involved both in the graduate and undergraduate program. And the way you really attract the best and brightest educators is really through having a research program.
Because they got into the field not just to be teachers, but because they enjoyed the research.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And the other thing is that they are the ones that are experiencing the massive and significant changes in technologies, and they really bring that experience and excitement to the classroom. You're not taking a faculty member that's sort of regurgitating material out of a textbook, things that are not sort of state-of-the-art, cutting-edge, future technologies. We make sure as an engineering school that when we hire a faculty member, that faculty member wants to do both research and teaching. As a matter of fact, that we do not hire anyone, or we do not have any faculty member that's not engaged in both. We do not allow our faculty to teach less than two courses a year, one per semester, because we want those faculty to be involved with the students, to be involved in the classroom, and to be good educators. What we find, too, is that a lot of our students, because they're so good, the undergraduate students, will find their ways into the research labs. I mentioned before we had the break that each one of the students have a capstone project that they have to do. But also we have something that's fairly unique to an undergraduate engineering school, and that is what we call a senior thesis. Each one of our undergraduates not only have to do a senior capstone project, but they also have to do a independent research project. Some of those projects might be projects that are at their design, but a lot of them really will be involved with a faculty member in their research lab working with master's and PhD students. So research really does add a dimension, I think, to our program that keeps our undergraduates talented and engaged.
So it's safe to say that if we brought an alumnus back from, say, the 60s when you graduated from that program as an undergraduate and gave them a tour of the school today, that they would just they would be very shocked to see all the research labs and the really high professional degree of research that goes on right here.
Absolutely. I mean, it changes constantly in terms of the type of technology we're dealing, the capabilities we have, and so forth. You really have to draw the best and brightest faculty. You have to have good facilities. You have to have good graduate students. To get good graduate students, you have to have excellent faculty. And so it really is a cycle that the basically alumni that come back are amazed at what's going on here.
Jim Ehler is our guest on Charlottesville right now. He's the dean of the School of Engineering and Applied Science at the University of Virginia. Let's talk about some of that research that goes on right here in our backyard, and particularly how some of it finds its way to the marketplace. We've interviewed Andre Alms and Bob McWright with the UVA Patent Foundation on this program, and they sort of sketched out the efforts the university is going in to streamline the process that discoveries made right here at the university can get to the marketplace and benefit. You know, it's win-win-win all the way around. Give us some examples of some things that are going on in engineering here in Charlottesville that find their way into the marketplace.
Sure. I guess the way to the best start this and to sort of see the motivation for this is that the faculty and the students involved in engineering really are basically taking science and reducing it to something that will help mankind. So, you know, we're not that interested in figuring out why the world was formed or anything like that. But what we really do is want to take what some of the latest science is and say, well, how can I build a better widget, or how can I improve some, say, handicapped person's lifestyle, or how can I advance the medical care? And so a couple of things that sort of come to mind, and I guess I should back up and say that a lot of our faculty really want to see what they discover to reduce to practice. Some of them want to start companies. Some of them want to see that the technology is licensed by someone. But they're really interested in not just developing technology for the sake of technology, but actually seeing how it can be applied in some places. A couple of examples that come to mind. One is something called WebCat. Basically what that is a software system that integrates a lot of information across the state, across sort of different areas where you're trying to deal with crime prevention. And the biggest issue in that area is that in some area where there's some crime being committed or has been committed, they really don't know. The police force or the investigators in that area may not know what's going on in other parts of the state or other parts of the country. And so that capability has allowed the various locales in a very cheap manner to get access to databases such they can better investigate crimes that go on. A number of police forces and sheriff's departments have picked that technology up and have found it very useful. And then also the neat thing that's going on there is that it also gives the faculty members and the students a platform for not only developing that but enhancing it. So when they can see its use and how it needs to be improved and so forth, it's sort of a constant interaction between the faculty and the students and the community.
So this is something that is out there actually helping law enforcement here in the Commonwealth, and you can look to undergraduate students and graduate students here at the university who had a hand in sort of ushering this along from
Absolutely.
The laboratory right out there into the sheriff's office.
Absolutely.
That's very exciting.
Developing it and also helping deploy it in terms of making sure that it's being used in the ways that they designed it and working right with the implementers of the technology.
That's really exciting. Jim Ehler is our guest. Any other examples of some research at the university and the engineering school?
Well, one example that maybe a lot of us can easily relate to is something called sonic window. And for those of you that might have had an ultrasound at some point and also had probably had an experience of somebody doing a giving you a shot and injecting the needle and not hitting the vein or something like that and having to do it a couple times. The idea of a sonic window is basically a miniaturized ultrasound system that allows the doctors or the nurses to go in and run it up your arm or wherever they want to put the injection and identify where the blood vessel is. So quickly do that so that when they do the injection, they get exactly where they want it to be. And so this is really an example here of not only some technology that's come out of the biomedical engineering department, but it's actually a set of faculty from biomedical and electrical engineering that have started a company around it. So an example here where people like to see their technology deployed, but also want to take an opportunity to see whether they can start a company to develop their technology further.
And it's exciting that the university, of course, is right there with them, helping to make that happen. Of course,
Absolutely.
This is something the university wants to help usher that along and shepherd these, make this, streamline this process and make it happen.
Absolutely. And I think adding to that is that's another dimension. If you're going to attract the best and brightest faculty, you need the students, you need the facilities, but also you need a capability so that if, in fact, they want to pursue starting companies and so forth, there is a mechanism, or just general technology transfer, whether it's licensed or starting the companies, there is a capability in Charlottesville in the local areas to do that. And that probably will include, too, venture capital opportunities and incubator-type facilities, and just basically capabilities that help them do what they want to do.
And we have the Patton Foundation and Spinner Technologies, and which really it takes the scientist by the hand and says,
Absolutely.
You don't need to know a lot about business. We can do that for you. We can help you. We can fill in those blanks, and we can really get this thing out of the lab and out there where it can really help people and change lives.
Absolutely.
That's
Absolutely.
Exciting.
Works
Tell us, Jim Ehler is our guest. He's the dean of the School of Engineering and Applied Science. Tell us about Wilsdorf Hall. What is it? Where is it? And this is an incredibly exciting development in the history of science at the university. Tell us a little bit about the nuts and bolts of the hall first, and then we'll explore some of the things that are going to be going on there.
Sure. As I mentioned earlier, advanced state-of-the-art facilities are an absolute essential to carrying on a successful research program. Faculty need it, and I guess I should say, too, at this time, doing advanced technology and research this day and time is very expensive. So you really need good facilities. You need good equipment. In order to stay in the top 25 research in terms of research schools and rankings, just as Cory said, we were ranked as number 3 by the Princeton Review in the graduate program. There's another area that we got a significant ranking in over the last 6 months, and that is from a magazine called Small Times. That magazine is interested in the whole area of nanotechnology, and they went around and ranked nanotechnology programs, first time they'd ever done it. And University of Virginia School of Engineering ranked number 6th in that ranking. And I think that was largely due to the people that we've got there and the programs we've got going, and also infrastructure that we've got. And so Wilsdorf Hall really is a brand new facility with basically a state of the art infrastructure to allow us to do research in an area where you're talking about devices and materials and so forth that are 1/10,000th the size of a human hair. So really, nanotechnology is just the technology of the small. It might be in the areas of electronic devices, for those of you that have upgraded your memory in terms of your iPods and to be able to store as many songs as you can on these things. That's really the result of nanotechnology and the ability to build these electronic devices that are just tiny.
But what's so amazing, I'm looking at a list here of what nanotechnology really is. We're talking about nanoelectronics, nanooptics, nanomagnetics, healthcare, the environment, energy, microspacecraft, biothreat detection, transportation, national security. This is an enormous reach for this technology, and we're doing so much of that right here, research right here in Charlottesville.
Absolutely. You really need to be a major research university. You really have to be involved in nanotechnology. We're fortunate, I think, that we're not only involved in it, but I think we're a leader in a lot of different areas. You can find these nanomaterials in things like state-of-the-art cosmetics. And I think the new area that we're dealing with is getting into the area of nanotechnology in terms of medical care. I mean, you really are down to the size of human cells, dealing with all sorts of things like sensing at the cellular level, trying to understand how cells operate, how cells create bigger things, and where ultimately you might be able to, instead of having to do a transplant of an organ, but actually grow your own organs like new kidneys and things like that. And
That's
so
amazing.
That really, the whole issue of nanotechnology spans the medical community and engineering and materials and all sorts of things.
You spoke earlier about the whole idea of collaboration as being absolutely critical to what goes on in the engineering school and goes on in any lab. And so I can see the fact that one of the best hospitals in the country is right around the corner really opens the door to a number of collaborative efforts, both in what you're talking about here with nanotechnology and the health field, and the scientists we have over at the University Hospital.
Absolutely. One of the sort of the views I have at this stage of the game is that some of the most exciting advances are and will continue to be are at the boundaries of the disciplines. So between engineering and medicine, even between engineering and humanities in terms of things like how do you archive significant documents in such a way that you can electronically search for things that you're interested in. One of the things I think we're extremely fortunate to have at the University of Virginia is a very collaborative environment. And I should say that one of the fortunate things we have in terms of the medical school is we have a co-located medical school, and it hasn't been privatized. And so, as a matter of fact, I've been able to hire several faculty over the last couple of years because of the fact that they wanted to be close to the medical school and saw real opportunities for collaboration between medicine and engineering. And so that's been pretty exciting, and other areas within the university make it possible. Things like sustainability between the architecture school, green engineering, designs for efficient energy usage. And that's been possible, I think, in a lot of cases because of the fact we've got an architecture school here and collaborative activities between engineering and architecture.
Jim Ehler is the Dean of the School of Engineering and Applied Science at the University of Virginia, one of the very best schools teaching and research of its kind in the entire world. Thank you very much for spending some time with us. I've enjoyed
it. Thanks, Corey. I really appreciate it. And I would like to invite anyone to come by and see me at the engineering school. I'd love to show you around.
This interview will be archived in its entirety on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at sevillepodcast.com. We're going to break for CBS News at the top of the hour, and we're back with Best Seat in the House right here on News Radio 1070 WINA.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.